Welcome to Personal Finance, Practice Principles, and Biblical Stewardship. So I'm going to go ahead and start. I'm going to pray first. I'm going to give you guys some instructions on how this is going to go as far as class is concerned. And then I'm going to give you also a little bit of disclosure, okay, so to protect myself and the innocent that are in the room, okay? So let's go ahead and go to the Lord in prayer first. Father, Lord, we come to you this morning so grateful and thankful, and I'm actually humbled, Lord, to be here in front of all these individuals, Lord, to be able to look into your word and talk about personal finance and biblical principles around that. I pray, Lord, that you remove me of self, allow me to be able to speak the words that you put into me, Father, and that there's something here, Lord, that someone can get out of this and be able to put into their own lives, Lord, and be able to improve the things that they're doing. And that is my prayer and my wish, Lord. And I pray these things, Father, in the name of your son, Jesus Christ, Lord. Amen. Amen. I am in the financial services industry. I've been in the industry for 37 years, and I am completely licensed to be a financial advisor, to do all that stuff. I enjoy working on the people side of the business, meaning supporting financial advisors versus sitting here looking across the table at you, at your money, and telling you where to put it. I respect people who do that. People who do that do a great – most folks do a great job, but it's a business of integrity because that's all you really got. And so we're going to kind of talk about in this class here, here's how this works. I ask questions. For those who are in my class traditionally, I'm going to ask a question in here. And if you know the answer, please don't yell it out. And those who attended my class 2 weeks ago, don't answer it. But I like to ask questions. I like to get audience participation because then that makes me feel like you're paying attention. If I ask a question, I get no audience participation. And then I start taking pulses, making sure everybody's still awake. So that's how it works. The idea here is to go through some biblical principles about money. What I'd like to do at the very end is we can talk about some best practices on things that I think that everybody should do when it comes to finances, okay, as far as personal finances are concerned. I'm going to use some ideas I think you should use, and they're not something that I'm saying. Again, I'm not saying I'm a professional person that's going to teach you how to handle your finances, but I'm going to tell you some things that I know that works for me and others that I've actually dealt with when it comes to finances. So for starters, though, I have to admit, I did go to school. I did go to college. I never finished, but I went. College was too slow for me. Nothing against college. For the right folks, if you think that's great, but for me, it was a little taking too long. I wanted to make money quickly. And going to college, it was 4 years. I'm not making any money, if anybody's ever done that before, right? So I wanted to go. But I have to admit, I was sitting in an economic class, and my professor in the economic class said, he asked this question. I'm going to ask you the same question. He goes, what do people want? So I'm asking you, what do people want?
Time.
Okay, that's a good answer.
Success.
What's that?
Success.
Success, that's a good answer. Peace and quiet, that's true. It's another answer. What else?
Health.
Health, security, a 401k, financial freedom. What are we in this class to talk about today? Money. The number one answer most people say is most people want money. But you guys shout out a lot of different things. But neither of those are the right answer, though. You know what the right answer is? If I was to ask you, what do most people want?
More.
Regardless of what you said, you want more of it. So the right answer is, what do people want? They want more. Regardless of what it is, they want more. Now, most time we talk about more, it's money. If I said I want money, don't you always think you can use more money? Who at their job right now is working their job and sits there and going, I think I make enough of what I do. Yeah, I'm good. I don't need any more. Who thinks that right now? Nobody says more money, but money is really, really important. So we're going to talk about money here. So how important do you think money is to life? I'll tell you what my answer is for it. I rank money up there with oxygen because I think you need it to live. Right? You do need money to live. It's unfortunate. Society we're in. We're in a capitalist society. You need money to live. So I rank it up there with oxygen. But really what money is all about, it's a tool. Money gives you more options is really what it does. It's a tool. It gives you more options. So, I mean, think about this. Who likes to go to all you can eat places? Anybody like to go to all you can eat places? You love them, don't you? Especially when they're serving crab legs. You know, I like crab legs. So you go to all you can eat place and they give you crab legs. And then they make that giant mistake where they bring, you know, French fries. And you're like looking at them like, excuse me, what is that for? Because I'm here to eat crab legs. So those fries, I know what you're trying to do. Fries and a salad and bread. All you can eat crab legs, but it comes with fries, salad, and bread. Could you think about this? Do you know that if you had enough money, anywhere you went could be all you can eat? If money was not an object, anywhere you went could be all you can eat. That's all money does, gives you options. If your car breaks down, how does that make you feel when you ain't got any money? It's a problem. When you got money, it gives you options. Matter of fact, if you got enough of it, you just kind of say, leave that one on the side of the road, just go to the dealership, buy another one. That's all money does, right? Just provides options. But here, the thing is, most people believe money is a matter of budgets, which we all should be budgeting, spreadsheets. You know, it's material and emotional what money really is. From a material standpoint, anything they want is a dream home, dream car, dream vacations. all those things that you may want, they're dreams, but that's a material thing. There's nothing wrong with having dreams, my friend. You should be having things you want to aspire for. But money helps you meet those type of things. It's an emotional standpoint, as I mentioned. The car breaks down. It's emotional. If the car breaks down and you don't have the money to fix it, or you take it to place, how do you take a place to take your car to a dealership, especially if it's a transmission issue? You take it in there, and you know, you're thinking in your mind, there's a number that I'm going to be uncomfortable with. Yeah, it starts adding stress to you, right? It starts adding stress to you. So that's the emotional part of what money does for you, because if you had enough money, I think your stress would be reduced a lot. And then the other thing is, if you invest in a business, Peter owns his own business, right? You invest in a business, you buy stocks and bonds, what are you expecting? A return. Returns or results. You want positive results from that. And that's how most of us kind of look at money. It's that way. It's looked at it that way. But in actuality, the Bible kind of gives us another way that we should be looking at money. Money has a different meaning in the Bible, and it talks about it. We're going to kind of go there. We're going to start by talking about what the Bible, I believe, says about money. And what I think money is, it's not about budgets, not about spreadsheets. It's not about material things. It's not about all those things. It's not about the emotions that come along with it. What it really boils down to is money is a matter of the heart. If you have your heart right about money, everything else falls into place. But you have to get your heart right about it first. And we're going to look at a couple of examples here. Someone who has their heart right and someone who doesn't. Go to Matthew. Go to Matthew chapter 19. We're going to go and talk about the little story. You guys probably all remember the story of the young ruler. Remember the young ruler comes to Jesus? Jesus is talking to all the people. And the young ruler comes up to Jesus. And he says to Jesus, what do I need to do to have eternal life? Remember that? So chapter 19, somebody said verse 16. Verse 16 kind of starts off the story a little bit. But he asked Jesus, what do you have to do to have eternal life? And so what God says in verse 17, at the very end of the verse, he says, you know, but if thou wilt enter into life, keep the commandments. And this young ruler, who's probably pretty sure of himself, he says to Jesus, which one? Which of the commandments should I keep? And look at verse number 18 there. So Jesus says, thou shalt do no murder. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness. Honor thy father and thy mother. And thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Man, as Jesus is probably reading through these things here, if you're thinking what I'm thinking, he's reading through this, and the young ruler's like, he's feeling pretty good about himself, because what's his next response? His next response is, hey, I've kept all those. Now, do you think Jesus knew he was going to say that? He probably knew he was going to say it, right? So Jesus is setting him up. He's setting him up. He knew he was going to say it. The young ruler says, hey, you know, the young man says unto him, all these things I've kept from my youth. What lack I yet? Great question. A little confident about himself, I think. And this is where he gets, you know, Jesus just slightly, you know, just spanks him a little bit. Says, hey, Jesus says unto him, thou shalt be perfect. Go and sell what thou hast and give to the poor, and thou shalt have treasures in heaven, and come and follow me. But when the young man heard this saying, he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. So the interesting thing is this. Why did the young man go away sorrowful? He loved his things. He loved his things more than eternal life. Now think about what he asked the questioner, right? His question was, what can I do to have eternal life, to be saved? Jesus tells him to sell everything you got and give it to the poor. And he was like, I can't do that. Why is that? What's more important to his heart? The things that he had. Now we're going to contrast that story. You think about that story, the young ruler has all these possessions, very wealthy. And we're going to contrast, we're going to look at Zacchaeus. We're going to look at Zacchaeus. So go to Luke chapter 19. Now I'm going to set the story here. If you guys remember, Jesus is on his way into Jericho. Okay, so he's passing to Jericho, and Zacchaeus was a chief among the publicans. He was chief among the publicans. He was a very wealthy individual. The problem, though, is Zacchaeus, he was very excited about seeing Jesus. He wanted to see Jesus. The problem was Zacchaeus was a little vertically challenged. He was very short, like, you know, just couldn't see all the people, throng of people. So he was vertically challenged. So what Zacchaeus decides to do is he decides to climb up on a tree so he can get an eye to see Jesus. That's what he was trying to do. He wanted to see Jesus so much because of that. Now, where we're going to pick up the story, if you look at chapter 19, you're going to look at verses 8 and 9. So when Zacchaeus gets up into the tree there, now when Jesus comes near, Jesus comes to the city, he's got a throng of people, and Jesus looks up and he sees Zacchaeus. He sees Zacchaeus up in the tree, and he says, Zacchaeus, you need to come down. So let's look at what he says here. And Zacchaeus stood. So he tells Zacchaeus to come down, right? Well, look at Acts. We're going to look at verse number 7. He tells Zacchaeus to come down. Zacchaeus hastily comes down, runs so excited because Jesus is saying to him, I'm going to have to abide in your house. Okay, and said, now, he tells him, come down and abide in your house. Now, look what all the people in verse number 7. Now, when Zacchaeus saw it, when they all saw it, they murmured and saying that he has gone to be a guest with a man that is a sinner. So, again, Zacchaeus had a lot of money, but according to the people, he was a sinner because he was a publican. But there's one thing that was interesting, because Zacchaeus, when Jesus comes in, Zacchaeus, in verse number 8 says, and Zacchaeus stood and said unto the Lord, behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor. And if I've taken anything from any man by false accusation, I restore him fourfold. And Jesus said unto him, this day salvation come into this house, for as much as also is the son of Abraham. Was Zacchaeus very wealthy? He was very wealthy. What made him different than the young ruler? What made it different? His heart was right, but what else was making it different? What did the young ruler do? He loved his possessions. What did Zacchaeus do? He tells the Lord, what did he do with his possessions? Gave him away. And if somebody accused him of false accusations, he would return it to him fourfold, which is very interesting if you think about that. So if I had learned it back in those days, if I learned he'd do that, I'd make a false accusation because I would want it fourfold. Zacchaeus, you've stolen $200 from me. But that's just the evil thinking I have in my mind, okay? That's the evil thinking I have. But Zacchaeus tells the Lord, the possessions meant anything. So what was Zacchaeus' heart toward? And you said it, toward his heart, right? It was being able to be saved. He wanted the fellowship with Jesus, and he wanted salvation for his home. Totally two different things. So in our own lives, we got to think about that. We have to think about in our own lives, what do we feel? How we feel about money? How do we handle those things in our own life? Because the Bible says, if you look at, let's look at some warnings about money. So money is interesting to have, but you all have heard the stories about money and how money can cause problems. I say money's a matter of the heart. Where does evil come from? The heart, right? Evil comes from the heart, goodness comes from the heart, but evil comes from the heart. So if money's a matter of the heart, and you got to make sure you have that. And if you have evil in your heart, you're going to do bad things, right? So money gives warning. Bible talks about money, warnings in Bible in the Bible also. So let's go ahead and look at 1 Timothy 6, chapter 6. You probably know this verse. 1 Timothy chapter 6. We're going to look at verses 9 and 10. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 9 and 10. But they that will be rich fall in temptations and a snare into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted it after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with some sorrows. You've all heard that before. The love of money, root of all evil. There's an interesting word in verse number 10. There's a word erred in there, E-R-R-D. This is where you can get yourself in trouble. Money is too easily given a place in our, not just in our wallets, but it's also in our hearts. And this is where we're starting to get into trouble. When you get money into the part where the evilness of the heart, it is definitely needed in your wallet, right? Because as I said, money is a tool. It allows you to be able to do things. I prefer to have it than not have it. But this word erred is interesting because it also can mean seduced. So money can seduce you into doing bad things. And this is what it's talking about when it says some men who've had it, they've been seduced into doing hurtful, lustful things with their money. I mean, you can talk about all kinds of things. So what are some of the things that money can seduce people into doing or not doing, the lack thereof or having so much of it? I'll give you just an example. Gambling. That's a bad addiction. What about just murder in general? Murder in general. Money and lack of money will make people do some bad things. There are so many other things up here. What about just in general morality? We're seeing that today. There's so much immorality going on, and it's stemming around money. People want more of it. And so people are starting to compromise themselves just to be able to get more money. Materialism is a thing that I think a lot of us could all just kind of fall into, and we probably don't think about it sometimes, but it's things where you have to have, as she's mentioned, the bigger, better, and the more, right? So it's really tough. Material is one we can all kind of easily into. Ecclesiastes 5:10 says, he that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loveth abundance with increase. That is also vanity. Now, pastor's been preaching on Ecclesiastes, Solomon. Here's a man who had everything. And what he is saying here is back to what I said in the beginning, more. You're not going to be satisfied with silver. You're not going to be satisfied with material things. You're going to have all those material things, but in the end, it's not going to satisfy. And by the way, you can't take it with you. But that's what we all look for. People are looking for more. Luke says this. Luke 12:15 says, and he said unto them, take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consists not of the abundance of the things which he possesseth. Again, if you think that life is going to be based on what you have? It's not. It doesn't have anything to do with any of that. But I can understand how some of us can get caught up on holding on to things. I mean, we all like to store things. I have to tell you, just about 2 weeks ago, I ended up getting rid of, I don't know why I held on to it, but it was just something I had, my senior year basketball jersey. It was about this wide. I mean, I put it on. I barely got into it. And I couldn't breathe. I was like, you know, so tight. I'm saying to myself, why am I holding on to something I wore my senior in high school? Because it reminds me of something from, you know, old school, but I'm holding on to it. It's just, what am I going to do with that? So it was interesting because I threw it away, and I pondered that time. And now I just thought about it. I threw it away, and now I'm thinking about going, I don't miss it. But I held on to it for a long time. My wife is that way. She's not here, so I'm going to talk about it. My daughter's here, so I got to be careful. But my wife is a person. She just got rid of some stuff, but she stores everything. I mean, my son's 30 years old, and we still got his little onesies from 30 years ago. You know, I'm like, well, why are we – well, I guess it's probably okay to keep, I guess, because that might be worth something. But we got his G.I. Joes with the Kung Fu grip, you know, those old school things. So it's something to keep, but materials could be a problem. It can be a problem. And so we have to make sure. But here's another thing. Sometimes lack of money also will have us do some things that not do things. One of those things that sometimes allow us not to do that we have to be careful of is not to tithe. Been in those positions before too. You don't have any money. And what will it not make you do? Not tithe. And so we have to be careful of that kind of. That gets us into kind of into stewardship. So let me ask you a question though. Just get your thoughts on this. Can a Christian be wealthy? Yeah, be wealthy. I used to try, and I'm not saying I'm wealthy, but I used to think about that sometimes because you read all the stories in the Bible, and then I thought about Solomon, who was very wealthy, and many others, right? But in my own life, I was thinking as I was trying to climb the corporate ladder and just doing everything I possibly can, I struggled with the opportunity or the thought was, am I going too hard at this? You know, at some point, you have to decide what's important between you and the family. And so I was having this struggle. And then I came across Proverbs 13:11, and that kind of helped me just kind of get through it. But yes, you can be wealthy as a Christian, but you obviously have to, if you are, you got to make sure your heart is right and do things right. But we're going to move into stewardship because that's where the rubber kind of hits the road. And to better understand stewardship, we need to understand a couple things about stewardship. So Psalms 24:1, because think about this, stewardship is important. Tithing is an important piece. And if you kind of get your mind set on what's important when it comes to supporting an organization like the church we have here, you got to understand from a few things. If you look at, you don't have to go here, but Psalms 24:1 says, the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world, and then the world and that they dwell therein. Which that basically says is everything that we have, everything, ultimately, look around the room, ultimately belongs to God. He created everything. So if you get that principle down, you understand that, that's great. Number two, Proverbs 3:5-6, trust in the Lord with all thy heart and lean not unto thine understanding, and all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. I like that word paths because it's plural. He will direct thy path. In life, there's multiple paths we take, and you're taking multiple paths in life right now. It's money is one path. Your health is another path. Everything that you're doing in life, but he will direct your path if you trust in the Lord. Okay, so you have to trust in him. So first of all, everything belongs to him. Number two, you need to trust in him. And number three is Proverbs 3:9-10. Honor the Lord with thy substance and with thy first fruits of all thine increase. So shall thy barns be filled with plenty and thy presses shall burst out with new wine. What that means is that the way in which we earn a living, doesn't matter how we do it, but the way in which we all decide to earn a living, God's going to bless us if we honor him first. That makes sense? So it's not a matter of saying I should do a different job or a better job to make more money. It's a matter of honoring God with the job that he has given you to do. Recognize, number one, he owns everything first. Number two, if you trust him. Number three, he's going to bless you if you pay him first. Okay? And that's how this process works when it comes to stewardship. So many of us, and me myself, you know, have come to a position where we pay our bills first. And then we, if we have anything left over, we tithe. You pay all your bills first. You know, you got to keep the lights on. You got to keep food on the table. And then, oh, what do we got left? Okay. And even when you have left, you even cut that in half to decide what you want to give the Lord. Because you want discretionary income. You want to be able to go out to eat. You want to go get that Starbucks, right? Everybody wants to get the Starbucks. You want to go do something fun for yourself. I used to tell Marty all the time, I used to say, they're going, I cannot work 2 weeks in a row and get paid and be able to do nothing fun. That was my deal. I mean, we're paying all these bills and everything, and I want to do something fun. I got to reward myself. That's what I was feeling like, right? And now we got to go tithe. And I wanted to go do buy myself this. And so, we have these discussions all the time. This is before we learned the principle, okay? I'm telling you guys I'm inside, but before the principle. But I understand all that. I've been there before. I've been there where I've worked my tail off and I'm saving some money here and I get $200 saved up. And I'm like looking at that little savings account all excited about $200. I'm just right outside. Because we were kind of go to the grocery store. You guys probably don't, I don't know if you guys remember this, but I used to go to the grocery store. And there used to be calculators on the carts. I don't know if you guys remember that. You guys shaking your head. You remember that? There's crack calculators on the cart. So when you put stuff in the cart, you do, do, how much is that? Do, do. And Lord know, if you mess up then way, boy, you're like, whoa, whoa. Okay, we got to go back through everything in the car. It was a mess. That's how we were. Had $200 saved up, all excited, and then the car would break down. Take the car to the shop, and I'm in that emotional piece now, Steve. I'm emotional now because I know what he's going to say. But here's what he would do. In my mind, this is what I thought he would do. He'd look at the car, and then he'd go, okay, let me go see what he's got in his account. He's got $200 in the account. Yeah, Mr. Ferguson, your car, we can get it fixed for you, but it's going to cost $200. And I'm like, dude, you looked at my account. You obviously saw that I had $200 saved up. My only $200, and now it's going to pay $200 for the car. Has anyone else been there before? I mean, that's how I felt. And literally, I'm thinking, he looked at my account and saw how much I had in there. That's just God getting his money, okay? That's all that is, just so you know. That's just God getting his money. Okay, so now I'm back to being broke again and miserable. Okay, but I had to understand this process here of making sure you pay God first. My testimony in regards to that is Monty and I had gotten done. I mean, I had been convicted going to church and listening to the preaching and about tithing and tithing. And every time tithing would come up to write the check out, my conversation was, I got to have some fun. I got to have some fun with the money I made. But this time I had a different attitude. And Monty's, we're writing through the checks and stuff. And it was almost Christmas time. We had a little money saved up for Christmas. And we had an electric bill we had to pay and didn't have enough money to pay the electric bill. So I told Monty, I said, we're going to have to just pay the electric bill and with our Christmas fund. And she's like, but that means the kids don't get Christmas. My daughter's in the room, so she doesn't know how close she came to having no Christmas that year. And I said, well, we got to trust the Lord, babe. I mean, I hear these people talk about trusting the Lord and the testimonies, and just take the money from the account. Let's just pay the electric bill. And she goes, okay. So we went ahead and wrote that check out, paid electric bill, and all our bills were paid, and we had to get food for groceries, but we had no money for Christmas, and we knew it was going to be tough. So it's the way things were. Now, I have to admit, I do recall feeling pretty good about it. I felt like, wow, that felt like a relief that I did that. But what I did not know what was going to take place, and again, not expecting it, just following the Lord's lead, about a week or so later, we get this check in the mail from USAA Insurance Company. That was who we had our insurance through because her father was in the military, which allowed us to get our car insurance. The check was $250. There was a check in there. And I remember looking at it going, why am I getting a check for $250? And what the letter said is, as a member of USAA, they pay a dividend check annually to all their members. I had no idea they did that. And the dividend check that year was $250. So I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. So we got that and put that money in the bank. So I thought that was Christmas. Then Monty goes to the bank to do something else, to work on some other deal we had. And she comes back. She's all excited. And there was an account that she had forgotten we had $50 in. So that kind of was there. And then we also paid too much on another bill. So by the time it was all done, we had like almost $400 came back to us. And from that point on, I was like, okay, Lord, I get it. I get it. It's not going to happen again. I thought that was the right way to go. So from that point on, we began to start tithing and tithing. Now, understand something. Not tithing from the expectation that God's going to give us money like that all the time. You know what I'm saying? Basically, is that God's going to take care of your needs. In that case, he just gave us cash money, but that's not what you're expecting, and that's not why you tithe for that type of stuff to happen. You have to trust in the Lord and do that. Now, I will be honest with you. I did make a mistake. I learned the hard way. Because we also had moved, and so remember, I'm tithing for years and years, and I'm at a different church, and we ended up moving far away from this other church. So what I decided is, since we're not going to this church anymore, we started going to another church, it was my brilliant idea to stop tithing at both places, because if we weren't members here, why would I give all this money over here if we're not members? And we're not going there anymore, so why don't I give money there? Guess what? I got more money. Yeah. All of a sudden, we're filling out the checkbook, and this, all this additional money I'm supposed to have disappeared. I can't tell you where it went, but for some reason I was struggling paying bills. Now, I'm not tithing anywhere, but I couldn't pay bills. I was running out of money. I'm like, what is going on? I couldn't figure it out. So I actually went to the pastor of the new church that we're going to, and I sat with him, and I said, I need to chat with you about something. He said, what is it? I said, I'm struggling here, my finances, but I think it has to do with the fact that I've kind of, my tithing's not right. And he goes, tell me what you're doing. And I explained to him what I had done. He goes, that's the wrong thing. Until you become a member of our church, you should be tithing back at your old church. So you need to get back to tithing until you become a member here, and then you can do that. You can't just stop tithing thinking, I got some extra money. That was my brilliant idea, was we got extra money. Now I can go do the fun stuff I want to do. Therefore, I went back to tithing, and believe it or not, everything just started kind of lining back up. We were able to have pay our bills back, get money back again, and it went back to. So my story and my testimony is I will never stop tithing ever again. It's just the Lord does honor that, but I understand how it is to go through those times that I've been there. But once you've paid the Lord, as we talked about first thing, who's the next person you should pay? Yourself. That's the next person you should pay. You should pay yourself next. So Proverbs 21:20 says, there is treasure to be desired and oil in the dwellings of the wise, but a foolish man spendeth it up. This is kind of a principle and kind of savings. You know, in those days, treasures and the desired and oil in the dwellings was a very precious commodity. And so being able to have some type of a savings account is an important thing to do. And spending it up is just not crazy. Now, believe me, I've been there. I know about spending it up, right? And sometimes circumstances require you to spend it up. When you got kids and you're trying to put them through private schools or you're trying to pay for colleges and stuff like that, you think you need all your money. At least I thought I needed all my money. I needed every bit of it, right? Every bit of it. But I think paying yourself is an important principle, and the Bible talks about that. It's very important to pay yourself first or second, and you have to be consistent on it. And when I say pay yourself, what I'm saying is actually write out or a check if you have to, or move money to a savings account. Now, some of you guys probably do this because we did this also. Have a checking account, savings account, and the same bank, and they're kind of tied together, right? And you move money from checking account to savings account. And all of a sudden, it's too easy to get to. So what you're trying to save goes away because you're accessing it through the same account. Everybody been there before? We've been there, you know. You get money saved up here. This is great. And then you want something, get the money in the savings account. I just kind of just get it right now and move it very easily. My suggestion is to open an account at another location, another bank, and put a savings account there and ACH money over to that account, something that's just not so accessible to get to. Because believe it or not, you will figure out a way to get to it. If it's really, really bad, you will figure it out. But the easiest way is to make it out of sight, out of mind. If you have money automatically going to another location in the savings account, even if it's just 10 bucks, you got to be consistent. Before you know it, it'll grow. One of my financial advisors was doing this, and he did it. He was, at the time he and I were speaking, he was probably 60, 62, I think he said he was. He started doing it when he was 18 years of age. And he was putting, I think he said 20 bucks away or something like that automatically. And he had almost $900,000 in an account just by putting money automatically, never touching it, never looking at it. So that would be my recommendation. Mike's thing is to consider putting it in a different place. The other thing I would say, if you have an opportunity to participate in a 401k plan, I would suggest doing that. Don't do like I did. A 401k plan is a retirement plan. Everybody know what a 401k plan is? It's a retirement plan that many firms offer. In most cases, in a 401k plan, it gives you the ability to control how much you want to contribute into the plan. What it also does, the benefit of it, is it allows you to take money pre-tax. So this is not money after it's taxed, it's pre-tax, which is a good thing. So it's on the max that you make. You pre-tax that money in. A lot of firms also require you to be a part of the firm before you get what they call vested, probably sometimes 6 months to a year. And what vesting simply means is that when you've been there long enough, all the money that gets into the account, should you leave, is yours. That's what vesting means. And many firms, which is a really cool key, will match a certain percentage or a certain dollar amount. So that's what I like to call free money. So for example, if a company is saying to you, I'll match up to 2% or 4% of what you put in, then you put 4%, they're putting 4%. That's free money. What's the total of 4 plus 4? 8%. That's free money. Why somebody would not want to take free money, I don't understand. But it's free money and it's pre-tax. Now the cool thing about being pre-tax is as you continue to grow and continue that money continues to grow in your prime earning years. Did anybody know what the prime earning years are for adults when you're going to make probably the most money in your life? You know what those years are? Prime earning years?
35.
What's that?
34.
You guys are right in the same area. So it's about 35 to 45 is going to be your prime earning years. So the cool thing about it, if you're putting money away pre-tax, the idea is whenever you need that money, you're in a lower tax bracket than you would be when you're putting the money away. So when you take that money out, 65, 66, 67, you're in a lower tax bracket. So you get more max the use of your money that's been put away when you're in a higher tax bracket. But if you can do a 401k, even if you're doing 1%, again, what that does is it's out of sight, out of mind, meaning that it's taken out of your paycheck at the gross amount. You won't even see it and let that money continue to grow. There's a lot more to it than that, but my suggestion would be if you can get yourself up to, how much should you be tithing to the Lord? So the Lord talks about tithing a tenth, right? One of the goals I remember having in my own life was, okay, if I'm giving a tenth to the Lord, I'd love to be able to get a tenth to myself. And one way to help me get a tenth to myself was to participate in my 401k. Our 401k plan matched up to 7%, which is really generous. So what I would do is if I was putting away 2%, if I got a raise of 3%, which would be great, instead of taking the entire 3%, I would take 2% raise and increase my 401k by 1%. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So my 401k was at 1%. So what ended up happening is I finally got to the point where my 401k was, I was putting 5% away, and the company was matching at 5%, and so I was putting away 10%. I felt good about that. It's like, wow. So not only am I paying the Lord his 10th, I'm being paid a 10th for myself, and it's coming off the top, so I don't even see it, and it's half of it's free money. So if you end up saving 20 grand and then the company's giving you another 20 grand, that's free money. That's free 20 grand free money that you get. So that would be my suggestion when it comes to saving. If you have an opportunity to do that in a 401k plan, I would always do that. Now, there's other type of plans out there, 403Bs and deferred comp plans and some of those things, deferred comp plans, some companies offer that. They're almost like a 401k. Unfortunately, what that does, though, is you don't have the ability to put money in yourself. The company is automatically putting the money for you, which is fine. So they're putting the money for you in a deferred comp. They're deciding how much to put away. And sometimes for right folks, that's good because you can't control it. So they're forcing you to save. So there's some good part in that. Both of them have their pros and cons. But if you can have an opportunity to participate in a 401k, I definitely would do that in a 401k. So that's anyway, that's from the savings. Now, let's go talk about some best practices here when it comes to finances. I would say purchase according to your needs. There's a difference between a need and a want. You got to understand that. Okay, a need and a want. And I would say you purchase according to your needs. Now, the other thing I would say is you would save money for major purchases. I know this is very difficult, man. That 55-inch TV, big screen television up there, you know, watching the game on that or whatever, that's a great deal. And I can get it right now. But in actuality, it's best that you try to pay that stuff in cash. And this is going to take a lot of self-control. And I'm only sharing things just in my own life. It takes a lot of self-control because do you want the TV or do you need the TV? You want it, right? But if you pay it in cash, it's going to be better. What I had to learn how to practice what we call delayed gratification. That's a hard thing to do. Delayed gratification means to save the money so you can pay cash and delay the gratification. Has anybody ever had buyer's remorse? You ever gone out and bought something, come home, put it all up, sit there, and all of a sudden sit there looking at it going, oh, man, what in the world did I do that for? That's buyer's remorse because you went off of impulse. You went off of a want, not a need, and then you want to take it back. You know, so to avoid buyer's remorse, it's always good to practice delayed gratification. So I'd highly recommend that. You know, avoid debt on depreciating items if you can. Proverbs 22:7 says, the rich ruleth over the poor. And the borrower is the servant to the lender. Credit cards, you got to have them, right? I use debit cards because that comes right out of my checking account. But some things in a credit card you should not do unless you're paying the card at the end of the month completely off. If you're paying it off at the end of the month, then you can do these things. But if you're not, I would avoid buying clothes, shoes, groceries, gas, food on a credit card. Avoid it unless you're paying the credit card off. Because think about this. You ate a great meal yesterday. It was awesome. Steak, lobster, whatever the case may be. It was awesome. You put on a credit card. You know you're going to be paying for that meal next year, 2 years from now. You bought groceries. You paid on a credit card. The groceries are gone. But next year, you're still paying for those groceries. You look at the interest rate on your credit cards. Anybody look at the interest rate on credit cards now? You ever look at that? What is it? What are they now? What are they? 29, 24, 30%. That means you give the credit card company $100 and they're keeping 30 of it in their pocket. Imagine paying groceries with a credit card and then you're thinking you're going to pay it off and you're paying for the same groceries or food, gas, clothes for the next 3, 4, 5 years. And they don't want you to pay it off, by the way. They like it when you give them $30 in their pocket for free. You want to talk about free money? That's free money for them. So unless you're going to pay the credit card off, I would avoid, if all possible, doing those type of things. If you have had to use a credit card, use a debit card that goes right to your checking account. Because you're going to be making stuff on the credit, you're going to be making, and believe me, I'm not telling you anything I haven't already done. Okay, I've paid for meals for years. Okay, it's I just wish I knew these things when I was younger, and I just didn't. Mortgage debt can be good, because the thing about a mortgage is, there's different options. You can sell it and repay the debt, because most of it typically it grows as far as the value is concerned. And it could be also cheaper than renting sometimes. If you buy something, it could be cheaper to get the right deal. So mortgage debt's not too much of an issue. And that's long-term debt anyway. And again, also having a mortgage gives you some tax advantages. So there's some benefits to that. I have to admit in my own thing, you know, I bought real estate as an investment, because I know it'll appreciate a whole lot more than sitting in my money market account or bank savings account. Anybody know what bank savings accounts are paying right now as interest-wise? 0.6. Exactly, right? They're not paying very much at all. And so if you got money, you know, you buy some kind of investment rental property or something, you can turn it around within a year and make your money back plus a whole lot more than that. So debt is not an issue. It's not too much of a challenge. Here's what I would also say. You need to create a spending plan. Most folks don't understand where their money goes. Now, if you sit and think about it, unless you track every penny of it, most people, because we didn't understand where our money goes. So a spending plan, and by the way, it requires both husband and wife to sit down and do this. You have to be both aligned on what you're going to be talking about. A spending plan is basically saying, here's what we're going to spend our money on. Here's what we're spending our money on, and we have to both agree to it. Okay, and then you have to, in order to get an idea of where you're at, it's probably a good idea to take about 2 weeks and write down everywhere you're spending your money and write it down. I think you'll be surprised. So things you need to look out for when you're going to spending plans, you need to look out for how much money you spend eating out. I know that's our nemesis. We spend a lot of money eating out. That's a problem for us. Coffee runs, like I said, Starbucks, hobbies. You know, if you're a big-time hobby individual, you got to be careful of that. And then the other thing is, if you're a big gamer, downloading things from the games. It's so funny. You download these. Man, I've done these things. You download these avatars and these different looks, you know, and they're electronic. And then they come out with a new game, and the one you paid for over here, it doesn't work over here, and that's gone. Think about it. You guys are laughing because you know what I'm talking about. I want that one. $20. Okay, it's all digital. And then the new system's out. Okay, and get this one over here, and then all that $20 you just spent just floated out, gone. Digital. You can't do anything with it. Just look at those things, but do a spending plan. Be aligned on what it is you're both spending your money on, and then talk about those things, okay? You have to talk about those things between each other. Husband and wife have to be on the same page here when it comes to spending and when it comes to money in those cases. And then the other thing I would also say is short-term and long-term goals. Proverbs 29 says, where there is no vision, the people perish. So goal setting is something that most people think from a business standpoint. If you own a company, I don't know if Peter does this, but if you own a company, you probably sit down and you write goals where you want to be. Companies do this all the time. People who own businesses, they always do goal setting. In our minds, what you have to think about, your household and what you do is a business. You need to think of it that way. You make an income, you pay bills, and you generate resources. So you need to think of it that way. When Monty and I began to start thinking about our household as a business, and we started planning and envisioning where we wanted to be, getting a handle on our finances, where we want to go, what's our five-year goal, where we want to be at, then we begin to start putting things together to help ourselves make the move. Because it's great intentions. You know, one definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. And so if you may have great intentions, say, I'm going to stop doing this, I'm going to do better here, but if you don't actually write it down and have a plan to actually achieve it, then you're not going to get it done. It's just the way human nature is. You're not. So the first thing we looked at is spiritual goal. What's your spiritual goal? What is it you want to accomplish this year from a spiritual standpoint? And I have my own spiritual goals that I have for myself, and she has hers. But financial goals is the second thing. We had to sit down. So when Monty and I first got married, and we didn't do this stuff, but I remember when we got married, we were talking. I said, let me see, how many credit cards do you have? And I pulled mine out. I had like a Gordon's Jewelers, and I think I had a Visa. And I asked her, let me see your credit cards. And she unfolded this thing, and it folded all out. And I was like, I'm like, what is this? She goes, they keep giving them to me. So I just try to see how many I can get. I'm like, well, are you kidding me? I said, we got to stop. This has got to stop. Now, good thing she didn't have a balance on all of them, but she had all kinds of cards. Now, she just thought because they were giving it to her, it was just a cool thing to have. But when you look at your finances, you write everything down. For example, if you have multiple credit card debt, you need to look at your credit cards. You need to look at the balance. And you need to look at the interest rate and look at the payments. And then you need to decide on which ones am I going to pay for first? Which one am I going to focus on? Okay, because trying to pay a little on each of them can be very hard. If you focus on one of them, and what we're talking about is the one probably with the highest interest rate, the one that's taking most of your money away from you, focus on that and double up on that one as much as you can, get that thing paid off and pounded. Then you turn around and take the money you're paying on that one, and you pay it on the next one. But you have to have these things written out. You have to have these goals set up on what you're trying to accomplish. And then you also have to track it. So it takes some time to do that kind of stuff. It takes discipline. And this is where most folks will have a hard time because it takes discipline to do that. But let me tell you, I will honestly tell you, if you take the time to do that, write your goals down and see where you're at and where you want to be, it is very satisfying when you actually get a credit card paid off and you actually make some headway. And so what Monty and I do every year is we do this every year. We sit down our goals and we have all our finances where we want to be and how much money we want to have here and there and everything. So it's really great. Then this year when we were sitting down, she started going back and we went back to 2015. We looked at 2013, 2014, and 2015, our goal sheets. And we looked at the amount of money that we owed. I'm not going to tell you what it was. It was ridiculous. And I'm looking at what we owed back then. And then I looked at where we were in 2024. And I'm like, it feels good because you can actually track. We can actually see if we go month, year by year, we can actually see our progress. And it's a great feeling to be able to see you make progress. But we would have never been able to do that if we hadn't sat down and actually do those type of things, okay? So spiritual goals, financial goals, and the last thing I would say is any personal goals that you have for yourself that you want to achieve, any personal goals you want. You always got to write those down. I'll tell you guys a personal goal of mine, and it's a goal I had for years and years and years and years, but it was never, ever the right time, ever, ever the right time. But I've always, and many of you guys already know this, but I always wanted a Corvette, always. It's the only sports car I ever wanted was a Corvette. But as a young man working, I couldn't afford one. Then we had kids, and you really can't afford one, you know. And then I was thinking, okay, they're graduating high school, maybe I could do it. And then they had this thing about they wanted to go to college. And so now I got to get them through college and, you know, and I just kept putting it off and putting it off. It just didn't make any sense. And finally, you know, when my youngest one had graduated college, and by the way, delayed gratification, which you guys don't know, and I'd been saving for a Corvette for a long time. I'd been saving for it. I just didn't make any sense to get it. But I had been saving, didn't have the money, just saving and saving and saving and saving. And I was actually very interested in getting the Corvette C7 because I liked the way that one looked. But when in 2020 and they changed to the C8 and then that newer model looks more exotic, it blew my whole thing up. I'm like, okay, I don't want that one anymore. I like that one there now. And I was able to just continue to just, when I say delayed gratification, meaning you have to just make sure that everything's in line before you make a decision on something. And so you guys all know I was able to buy that car. What you don't know, and just I was able to buy the car, but I saved up and just been taking a long time to get it done, but I actually was able to get the car. When you do something like that, you work for it, you save up for it, you delay for it, and you wait until God leads you in the right time to do all that stuff, you make a decision like that, there is no buyer's remorse in something like that because you have done everything you're supposed to do to make sure that that's the way it is. And it's just a vehicle. It's a nice car. Believe me, it's just a vehicle. I had somebody ask me, they said, why didn't you get a vanity plate? I'm like, it's not about vanity. That's the point. You know, it could put a vanity plate. I saw one the other day. I said, "You're too slow" on the back. You are too slow. I thought that was pretty cool. But I didn't want to do a vanity plate. I just wanted to just say, I'm just blessed and thankful that I was able to even have the car. And it is just a vehicle. It's a nice vehicle, but I enjoy it. I didn't have any buyer's remorse. And even to this day, I've had it since April. And I don't feel like I don't feel like I made any kind of mistake. Now, I have been in the opposite position where I have bought a vehicle. And then I literally took the vehicle back to the dealership. And the next morning I woke up, the keys were on my door. They took it back. They're like, you can't bring cars back like that. That's a whole nother story. But I did that. I'm serious. I literally did that. I got the car home the next day. I made a mistake. I drove it back to the dealership. They're like, "We're not taking this back." I'm like, "Yes, you are." I'd left the keys on the thing. I got my car, mine and I, we drove back. Next morning I get up and get ready to go to work. I open the door and I heard something fall. I looked down and there the keys were. I went back out around the corner and there the car was in my parking lot. They drove it back, put it in the dark and said, "Mr. Ferguson, you can't do that." Anyway. That's a whole story for another day, but that's when you're talking about making. See, that's a mistake because I bought the car on emotion, and then when I realized what I did, I tried to fix it in the way anybody would take it back to the store, right? Just take it back. Don't take it back. You don't do like that with cars. I learned the hard way, and by the way, it cost me a ton of money to try to get out of that and everything also. So again, a mistake, right? Not paying attention. So anyway, that's kind of all I have. I have a few minutes for a couple questions if anybody has any questions about anything.